Very excited this morning to be able to host a friend and colleague, Rabbi David Kaplan. I'm soon to be doctor, already doctor?
Soon.
Very soon to be doctor. It's really an honor to host him. Everyone saw his bio. I'm not going to go through it, but suffice it to say that at a young, relatively young age, Rabbi Shabtai has already distinguished himself as an up-and-comer in this field, very much in a lot of these topics, both in terms of halacha and even in terms of just pure medical topics, and he's really distinguished himself already. And that's really an exciting opportunity to really leverage not only his knowledge of Torah, but in particular as well his knowledge of medicine. And hopefully we'll see it in the Vesem speak a little bit, not only about theory and certainly practice as well, and to really glean what we can from his medical expertise as well. And it's really an exciting opportunity to have someone who's really very well versed in both fields and really can bring them together in a very practical way. And I think really you see the difference or what makes the opportunity to hear from someone who really knows the medical information and really is very committed to knowing not only the halacha, obviously the halacha, but also knowing how that plays out with the mitzvah of modern day medical advancements and really enhances considerably the material and that which he has to offer. So we're very excited he's agreed to come and to join us. And without further ado, I introduce Rabbi David Chaplin.
Thank you, thank you guys very much for having me and willing to listen to me. I don't know about medical expertise, I'm a fourth year medical student. Apart from Friday, I finished my last day of rotations. So this is vacation. The 2 weeks in the medical examiner's office, not so much of expertise, but fascinating. There's actually a fourth year student from here, Sophia Rodriguez, going into pathology. Anyway, I just thought it was cool. There's a lot of halacha and tshuvas about autopsies and whatnot, and I thought that would be an interesting thing just to see. Gross, but interesting. So I was told this is the beginning of a series of shiurim. So I want to talk about chol sheyesh bo sakana on Shabbos. A chol sheyesh bo sakana is a person who is ill and his life is in danger for whatever reason. And so the reason that it's important to talk about this at the beginning. So the halacha is that mishiyut cholish al sakana. It's quoted from the Rambam. It's on Shulchan Aruch. So mitzvah lachal of the Shabbos. It's a mitzvah to be machal Shabbos to do whatever you can to at least alleviate that sakana. The hazaris harizah meshuvah. He who does it more quickly. That's praiseworthy. The shoel harizah shofech damim. That's a pretty serious thing. If you start to ask questions about machal Shabbos for cholish al sakana, so you are shofech damim, which is as if you killed the person, even if the person then lives. The Mishnah Berurah quotes Yerushalmi. It says, that quotes the different girsas of Yerushalmi or somewhere else, that Hanish al Hareza Megune, that the person who gets asked the question, so it's his problem as well. It's Megune, it's ugly, it's terrible that he should be asked the question. So why is that? So because people should know what the halacha is, that Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana on Shabbos, you're Mechal Shabbos, you don't think twice, you do whatever is necessary to save somebody's life on Shabbos. Shabbos is put aside, as long as there's no Avodah Zarah, Shvichas Dam, Gilui Arayos, there rarely is. You do whatever you can to Mechal Shabbos, you don't ask questions, the rabbi gets in trouble for not teaching this, and that's it. So that's pretty much it, so we don't really have to talk about anything else. So the Aruch HaShulchan already in the first Sif, so he quotes that, and he says, okay, so then why don't we have the rest of the Simen, Simen Shin Kaf Chesed Shulchan Aruch, in our Chaim is all about Chol V'Shabbos. So he says, look, well, in all honesty, there are different types of sakana. There's acute sakana, and there's chronic sakana. And even in terms of acute sakana, there's urgent sakana and there's emergent sakana. So if someone falls down and is coding on the floor, you do whatever you need. You initiate CPR, you start your ACLS protocol, you don't think twice, you just do it. There are other cholin sheyesh bahem sakana that are much more chronic. You can have a cancer patient, for example, who is in the hospital, is getting chemo. You know, their life's at risk. Their chances aren't that wonderful, but they're cholin sheyesh bahem sakana. But they've been in the hospital for a week and a half. And so they know they're going to be in the hospital for another week and a half. So we can sort of plan ahead of time. We've been there on Shabbos before. We know pretty much what it's going to be needing. So on Wednesday, Thursday, we can start to think about it. So it's those patients that we're thinking about. The acute, emergent cases who you need to deal with on the spot, you don't think twice about Shabbos. So dealing with everybody else then. So in terms of refuah on Shabbos, so there are really three categories I like to think about. The first thing is you have to talk about the status of the person in question. the Chola himself. There's a person Yisrael, an Eino Yisrael, an Ubar, a Katan, a fetus, a child, a Cheresh Shota, and different, that may have ramifications for what we do. Practically, not really, but the post can talk about this. The second thing that it's important to always keep in mind is the severity of the condition that the person has, and how do we judge that severity. And then the third issue is the severity of the Isser involved. Had it not been a Chola Sheish Masakana, doing this act would violate what Isser? And I'd like to deal with the latter two, because like I said, the first one, in terms of status of people, if it's an Eved Knani, or Eved Shemal, Velo Tavol, Velo Mal, all these things are fascinating machlokesim in the Achronim, but not really practical. Nowadays, certainly not for me. So, in terms, again, breaking this up even further, when thinking about Cholam on Shabbos, so I like to think about it again from two perspectives. There's the patient perspective and the doctor perspective. So we are all, in the end, we're all patients, because, I mean, I've had to make decisions, I have children, and I've had to make decisions about when to go to the hospital on Shabbos. And this just happens. And Baruch Hashem, everyone was fine, but you need to make a decision, and it happens frequently. And, you know, I live in Washington Heights, and people come to me and ask me, should I go to the hospital on Shabbos? I'm like, call itself, I don't know. But you need to make decisions for yourself, when are you concerned to go? And then from a physician perspective, when you're taking care of patients and you want to talk to them ahead of time maybe, when should they machal Shabbos? When should they be allowed to eat on Yom Kippur? And they're two different perspectives because it comes from two different realms of expertise. A patient, we're assuming, does not have any medical knowledge or minimal medical knowledge or general medical knowledge, whatever that is. And a physician is supposedly, who's an expert in the field, has more detailed knowledge. And if you don't have expertise in the field, so you're just like a layperson. So Dr. Avram, the Orach Nishmas Avram, likes to say, so the Shulchan Aruch is written for everybody. And 90-something percent of people have no expertise in the field. Even most doctors have no expertise in emergent situations on Shabbos. Like I said, the girl who's a pathologist, so you're probably not going to ask her questions. She has an MD. You're not going to want to know, should I go to the emergency room or not. But the Shulchan Aruch is written for everybody. And so he likes to say, all you need to determine whether you should go to the hospital on Shabbos, whether you should bechal Shabbos for Chol Sheish B'Sakana on Shabbos, is Yerush Shamayim. If you have Yerush Shamayim and you know what Shabbos means, and you know what Shabbos is to you, and you're concerned, you bechal Shabbos. That's all you need to know. As long as you're concerned, as long as on the week that you go to the hospital, you go to the hospital on Shabbos. You don't have to think twice. Because that's the point. It says Chol Sheish B'Sakana. How do I know if there's a Sakana? I have no idea if there's a Sakana. But if I'm concerned that there's a Sakana, that's enough. So this comes down from a Gemara in Yoma. Right, the Gemara in Yoma discusses that a bunch of Amoraim were walking, and they want to know, how do you know you're supposed to mechal Shabbos? It says, V'kvar yeh Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, mehalchem b'derech, v'levi hasadar, Rabbi Yishmael, b'dosha, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, mehalchem achareim, nishalas she'elazar b'fneihem. Minayin l'pikoch nefesh adokha et Shabbos. How do we know Bigoch Nefesh Zdoch HaShabbos? So this is interesting, because there's an assumption that Bigoch Nefesh Zdoch HaShabbos. And they're asking all these great Amoraim, how do we know that Bigoch Nefesh Zdoch HaShabbos? So apparently it wasn't well known. How would we know what the limud is? And we'll see that there are ramifications for what exactly the limud is. But there's a basic assumption that this is permitted, and we know that because there are only three Averis that you give your life over for. Avodah Zarah, Shkufas Vav, and Gilui Raya. Shabbos is not one of them. So they're trying to give different limudim, exactly how do you know? And so the first one they find about a Ganav and a Machteres. And they say, yeah, but that doesn't really, we're not really sure if that's a good idea, and they can disprove it. Then we try for Mila. We say Mila is one Aver, and so we're allowed to Mechal Shabbos to do that. Shouldn't we certainly be allowed to Mechal Shabbos to say all the Avarim of a person on Shabbos? And they say, yeah, but Mila has other issues with it, because Mila has Yigimul Grisos, and Mila is a special category in itself. You can't necessarily learn for Mila. Then we say, what about Achas or Sosek and Shmaru? You really should maximize Shmira Shabbos. So Chalalav Shabbos Achas, Kadesh Yishmar Shabbos as Harbe. You make a statistical equation. You say, I want to be saved as much Shmira Shabbos as I can. So if I'm a Chal Shabbos once, I'm going to give this person another 50 years of Shabbos. So you do the math, it works out. So that should be Mutter. They say, yeah, but that doesn't really teach us cases of Suffolk. That means if I know he's going to live for my Shabbos. What about a Suffolk Pikuach Nefesh? I say, how do we know Suffolk Pikuach Nefesh? Because the pasuk says, "Eilam mitzvot asher yaseh otam ha'adam v'chay b'hem." These are the mitzvot that a person should do and live by them. But and live by them, so that he should live by them. And the Gemara darshins v'lo she'emus v'hem. You do the mitzvot to live. The mitzvot should not cause you to die. So practicing mitzvot should not cause you to give up your life. And then they say, "Lakulu it l'piyach habarim d'shmol d'leisaker." That's Shmuel's limud. We were able to refute all the limudim before. Shmuel, we can't refute. That's the rule. The Chai Bahem Veloshi Amuspahem. We apply that to Shabbos. Almost all Pesachim apply that to all Shar Mitzvahs also. We're Mechal Shabbos. And so that's the final Limud. So the question is, what about these other Limudim? Do they have any role whatsoever? It's unclear. Does B'chai Bahem encompass all of the other ones? Do the other ones have other things that we can learn from them? Because B'chai Bahem doesn't really teach you much else. It's just B'chai Bahem. Mila has other ramifications. B'chal HaShav Zahaz may have other ramifications that if, you know, if the final limud encompasses all of the others, it's different than if the final limud rejects all of the others. So, when we learn B'chai Bahem B'lo She'amus Bahem, the Poskim argue that you have actually a chiyuv to B'chai Bahem. That's a mitzvah. You may not say, I understand that my life is on the Sakana. I want to keep Shabbos. You don't have that option. Tosfos in Avodah Zarah, Kaf Zayin, talks about maybe you do have the option to give up your life. You know, even their mitzvahs are Har Yavro, like we said, or B'shas HaShmad, any mitzvah, but he says you're allowed to really give your life up for any mitzvah. If you really want to, you're allowed to. And one of the riots that happens is this parsha is from the Tzardim. So the Gemara in Tzachim says, how did Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah know not to that they could jump into the kifs on the Aish? They had a kal v'chomer from Tzfardim, that the frogs were able to jump into the fire, and they were mitzvah al-kiddush Hashem, and they jumped into the fire to be mekayim the mitzvah, because it says the frogs were everywhere, in your ovens, in your beds, everywhere. So to us, we're mitzvah al-kiddush Hashem, and so too we can jump ourselves into a fire and give up our lives for kiddush Hashem. So Kosher says you can really do that for any mitzvah. You can learn from Tzfardim if there's going to be a mitzvah kiddush Hashem. So the Rabbis points out that's true when there's a mitzvah kiddush Hashem. There's no mitzvah kiddush Hashem to sit in bed and die. So if a person's life is at risk, you have a mitzvah and you have a chiyuv to save the person's life, and you have a mitzvah upon yourself to save that to save your life and someone else's life. There's absolutely no difference, and you don't have the option of foregoing that. So let's try to think about now which types of patients qualify to be Mechal Shabbos. Who is a Cholos Yesh Bo Sakana? I'm going to limit it only to Cholos Yesh Bo Sakana. There are other types of Cholos on Shabbos, and certain things can be set aside for them, but we'll leave that for another time. So we're talking about Cholos Yesh Bo Sakana, and we want to violate Yisurei D'Orais before them. So in the United States of America, in today's day and age, we can almost always, from a patient's perspective, not violate Yisurei D'Orais. You can almost always get around it, and somehow, that's not the focus of today's year. We don't know when you can violate Yisurei D'Orais, should it come to it. And then, do I need to worry about all these tricks and gimmicks and how to get around it? But we want to focus on Yisurei D'Orais. So we'll try to think of some examples as we go along, but almost always we can come up with a way to get around it, but it's important. In Israel, one of the major issues is driving a car, which involves Yisurei D'Orais. There are other issues involving Yisurei D'Orais. So, for example, in hospitals in Eretz Yisrael, where they work purely al-pi halacha, inviting Yeshua, for example, on the Yad, or certain parts of Shari Tzedek, this issue is much more relevant for them. Because here, as long as the level below of an Yisurei D'Orais is Amir El'Akum, if you can ask a non-Jew to do the halacha for you. And Baruch Hashem, we live in a society of non-Jews who we can rely on for a lot of these things. And so it's much easier. Inviting Yeshua, they don't apply any non-Jews. In Laniyahu, they don't apply any non-Jews. And so this is a much more acute question for them. So like we said, who qualifies? The patient's assessment is the first thing, right? As Dr. Avram said, if you're concerned, in Mechal Shabbos. Then we have a physician's assessment. If a physician thinks that this person has a risk to life, then Mechal Shabbos. I mean, he knows. Even if the patient disagrees, now this can happen. You have these elderly patients who, you know, I don't really need my Coumadin. Like, no, you really need your Coumadin, otherwise you'll have a stroke. Or you have a mechanical valve, you're going to clot. You really need your Coumadin, but I feel good. Like, you really need your Coumadin. If you don't get your Coumadin, you're a Cholos Yesh Bo Sakana. Because you're going to stroke out and you might die. Or something like a woman who has HELLP syndrome. Right? Hemolysis, elevated liver enzymes and low platelets. Someone has headaches and a little bit of upper abdominal pain. She doesn't realize her life might be at risk. Or her fetus is like more at risk. But as a physician, you do the blood test, you know she's at risk. And this can develop, and you want to intervene or do whatever is medically appropriate at the time, and the woman might disagree with you. So a physician's assessment is enough. Now, what do you do when doctors disagree? So this is a lot of the discussions in the post-mortem is that epidemiology was not a real scientific field. And so we don't have numbers, and we don't have risks. So we can't tell someone, you have a 3.3 risk to die from this condition. They didn't really know that. A lot of it was expertise and assessment, and you have all these discussions about when one doctor disagrees with another doctor, and who do you believe, and how many and who's the expert and whatnot. A lot of this is not so relevant anymore because we have more accurate information. We know, look, I can plug your numbers into a computer and I can tell you your risk. You know, I can tell you your risk of surgery. Statistically, we can do this. You know, there are elements of the art of medicine and there are, you know, elements of the expertise, but a lot of this can be alleviated somewhat. And then the third type of patients who qualify are those who halachically are declared to be a cholos yesh ben sakana. So certain medical conditions qualify in halacha as a cholos yesh ben sakana. And the question is, what do we do today when we're like, we don't know what this is. Or it's not really cholos yesh ben sakana today, but in the time of the Gemara, they really thought so. So we'll get to some of that. So from the physician's perspective, which we'll do first, because we talk about the patient's perspective, it's pretty easy. If you're concerned, you're concerned for your life, and you have your shamayim, you know what Shabbos is, you know what it means to be mechal Shabbos, and yet you're concerned, you go to the hospital, do whatever is necessary. Fine. From the physician's perspective, so now we're talking about either an acute patient who, you know, you have that the NSTEMI who comes into the ER, you've thought about this 100 million times, I don't know how your hospital is here, I was in Bellevue, 80-something percent of our patients come in just like this, they're all exactly the same, you've thought about what to do with them, you've thought about exactly what tests need to be run. So how do you make that determination? So again, the Gemara in Yoma, on Pehei, talks about different situations, and they say, Ein holchin b'pikuach nefesh achar harov. By issues of pikuach nefesh, we don't follow the majority. Normally in halacha, we would say, look, how do I know if this patient has a sakana? Well, if the majority of such patients in his condition, their life is at risk, so then I can assume, rubo kekulo, I can assume this person's life will be at risk too, and I can mechal Shabbos. The Gemara in Yom is teaching us that no, by pikuach nefesh, we don't say the rubo kekulo, we say, Ein holchin b'pikuach nefesh achar harov. We don't follow the majority, we can even be choshesh for a minority. And then Tosfos there clarifies what exactly does that mean, and it's very clear. And there was an error in the Marmot Kolos. It's Dibramatul Makayach Nevel Beficach. So Omer Rita Hayin Chaima De Ein Olchem Bebiloch Nefesh Harov. Why? Mishum Dechdiv V'Chay Bahem. That's what V'Chay Bahem means. V'Loshi Amus Bahem. Shelo Yuchal Lovo B'Shum Inyan Lidei Mitas Yisrael. You shouldn't come at all anyway. No Jew should die over Chilul Shabbos. That's what it means. You should never die over Chilul Shabbos. So even if you know, only 10% or 20% or 30% of people in your situation might die, I'm going to Mechal Shabbos, because otherwise 20% of people would die. So the question is, so okay, but what level of risk? What about 0.00001%? At some point there's going to be a limit, and the Gemara doesn't seem to really discuss it. So we know certainly less than 50. Okay? And in Halacha we normally have the concept of a Mir HaMatsui. In Mir HaMatzoi, it seems like we do Mechal Shabbos too. For Mir HaMatzoi, Mir HaMatzoi is either 7, 10, or 14%, more likely between 7 and 10%, depending on how you want to. We could do choshesh both ways, maybe for different areas, so at least 7%. But there's a lot of medical conditions that are less than 7%. I was astonished. I was looking up health syndrome. And, you know, we treat this as such a, I mean, I didn't do well in obstetrics. But we treat this as a sakana. We do. And what I was taught is that we deliver or terminate the pregnancy. You get the baby out of that mother. If it can live, great. If it can't, I'm sorry, her life is at risk. So because we treat it that way, so it's somewhat of a self-fulfilling prophecy, it's hard to do research on this. What about the women who aren't treated? What's the risk of mortality? One study had 1.1%. One study had 0.9% mortality for the mother. And the second study had 3.4% for the fetus, if you don't treat them, of death for the fetus. There were other issues of morbidity. So 1.9, let's say 1% chance. So in the medical world, we're terminating a pregnancy possibly over 1% chance. Is that enough? I'm not talking about abortion, but in theory. What about if it were to kill Shabbos? Right? Is 1% enough? Yes?
I wonder, just in terms of terminating the pregnancy, so when the fetus is considered to pose a risk to the mother's life, so I'm not completely familiar, but I think it might be left with growth date or something. So there, maybe the percentages are different. That if someone is trying to kill someone else, and there's a very likely chance that they'll succeed, I don't know, maybe if you look at
certain
the numbers differently.
Oh, yes, I don't want to get into that so much, but so in terms of the abortion question, there is the baby actually posing the risk to the mother? The baby here isn't actually, we don't know why a woman develops HELLP syndrome. And is it the baby posing the risk, or is it the pregnancy posing the risk, and does that matter in halacha? And so there is a fine nafkamina whether you will allow, I talked about this with Rabbi Blight, he had issues with this. It's how exactly you formulate the issue of abortion. Is it the baby, is it her pregnancy causing the risk, or is it the baby causing the risk? Let's leave it at that. We just want Mechal Shabbos to save her life. Let's leave the pregnancy out of it. So can we Mechal Shabbos for 1% risk? So medically, we're concerned. We admit this woman to the hospital, and we treat her. Right? So is that enough? So the in terms of the questions of suffix, so how does the Shulchan Aruch deal with the questions of suffix? So it's fascinating, right? And like I said before, I think it's pretty obvious, they didn't really have so much of the epidemiology back then. You know, certainly not evidence-based medicine or anything even remotely resembling that. So the cases that the Shulchan Aruch discusses are different types of sfeikos. They want to know, the halach is we can mechal Shabbos for Yisrael and we cannot mechal Shabbos with the Raisa for an Eino Yisrael. So they want to know, what if I don't know who the person is? So he says, we have these interesting cases. They have, you know, and they get back to the issues of rove and halacha. If you have 9 non-Jews and 1 Jew in the chatzar, and an avalanche falls on one of them, and I don't know who it is, so then you'd say, can I have a chal Shabbos for him? So to dig out the rocks would be a chal Shabbos deraisa, possibly. So can I have a chal Shabbos? Say, well, the only 10% chance that I can have a chal Shabbos for him, so that the rove says not. But I do it anyway because ain't no chukuk nefesh achar rove. An older Rishon jump, I say, well, that's not really a rove, because we can really employ other issues and other concepts in halacha, kol kavua kamechta al mechta. If I have, sometimes we apply the issues of rove. We take the majority of something. So if I have 9 stores, if I have 10 stores, 9 sell trade meat, 1 sells kosher meat, and I find a piece of meat out in the street, so I can't eat it. I have to assume it comes from 90% of the stores. But if I send in a cheresh out to the katan or a non-Jew and he says, I bought this piece of meat for you, I just don't remember which one it is, then the situation is different, because if I call kavua kamechta al mechta, that which is permanent, we assume that there's a 50% chance you went into either one of them. When you apply which, when you apply the other, in terms of it, whether it's a complete set, an incomplete set, it's a little bit complicated. And the Shulchan Aruch then says issues of suffix. And the issues of suffix here are more like, do I know who this person is, and do I not know who this person is, and do I apply those rules or not? And they don't really get into the question of, is this person's life at risk? The assumption is all these people's lives are at risk. Or there's a vadai sakana. All these people will die under that pile of rubble if I don't save them. I mean, I saw a story last night. There was a woman under the rubble in Haiti for like 96 hours or something, and she was alive. But we would assume that not, I guess, but I was shocked by that. I guess that's why I made the news. So, interestingly, the Shulchan doesn't really discuss issues of suffix when it comes to the condition, the medical condition itself, only for the person. And then it comes to, really, are these really questions of suffix, or are they questions of a suffix sakana, or really of a suffix sigresha? Meaning, if this person is a Yisrael, then I'm vadei lot to b'chal Shabbos from, because his life is certainly in danger. It's a different question of suffix. So how do we deal with our sfeikos today when, well, this person's coming and he has a 20% chance of dying. I know he's here. If he does, I can b'chal Shabbos for him. If he is in that 20%, I can. If he's in the 80%, so I can't. So how do I know? So, interestingly, that all the poskim pretty much say it doesn't matter. We can learn from these rules to our rules in any case of suffix sakana that we're going to do. And so, again, how do we know what level of risk is going to be okay? So we said like 50%, 40% seems likely. And in the medical world, even the 1% risk to the mother is okay. 3%, 3.4% risk to the fetus is what we practice. So what about halacha? So the Tzitz Eliezer, who... there's one open show. I'm just going to promote a sermon that I like on medical issues. So Tzitz Eliezer in Chalek Ches, he has something called Kuntres Meshivas Nefesh. It's shiurim he gave to the doctors of Shari Tzedek many, many years ago. It's a whole simon, which is a whole book in itself, on essays on Hilchos Refuah B'Shabbos. And what's fascinating is in the next chalek he has responses to that, and he keeps going on and on and on and on for chalekim. So you can just follow his chain of thought and responding to things. So he has a section in Tzitz Eliezer in Chalek Ches, in Simon Pedvav, which is a Simon, Perek Zayin, and then everything gets broken. You see these Maror Komos that take up a whole line to tell you where it is, because it's a book within a book within a book within a book. So he's trying to make sense of this. So he says, okay, so how do we deal from all these cases of the avalanche and the collapse to our reality? So he quotes different ways of understanding that, and he says, look, I'm going to sum it all up. Let's leave out the details at this point. He says, we have to have a patient in front of us, where the illness is currently present. Okay? We're going to mechal Shabbos as long as something is going on now, or that which will happen has started. But we're not going to mechal Shabbos for a suffix, not a rove, but a suffix in the future where nothing happened yet. He doesn't really give examples of this, which is okay. You know, he may not have known, but sometimes he does, because the doctors in the audience would prompt this. It's based on the Rubid Isa come on, Rubid Alesa come on. So if we have a patient in front of us, it can't be a theoretical patient. It can't be we're going to try to save some patient's life who's not here right now, but, you know, in theory, this research will help, stem cell research will eventually help. I'm confident in bone marrow replacement, right? We're pretty sure that that'll help. It's not perfected yet. So can we work on that on Shabbos? There are chol in front of us, but this isn't really going to save them. So he says, no, we can treat a chol in front of us right now as long as the condition he has is right now. Because otherwise we're going to treat every cold. Because a cold can eventually develop into pneumonia. And pneumonia can be a chol shesh pasuk, unless we could treat it. But the pneumonia is not present now, he writes. He has a cold now. And so we can't have a chal Shabbos for this person. We're talking about only doraisas. So I don't know what that means to be chol the present now. Is the same bug that's causing the cold the same bug that's going to cause pneumonia? And if it is that considered present now? He doesn't discuss it. Well, it could be super infection. You're right. So what about strep throat? So strep throat, right, strep pharyngitis, pharyngitis, we treat. Why? Only because it's causing rheumatic heart disease, right? The patient will get better within 5 to 7 days, whether or not we give them the amoxicillin. But we only treat him because later they can develop rheumatic heart disease. And rheumatic heart disease is a question of sakana, because you can have a valvular lesion and you will die earlier, not necessarily. You have an X percent chance of developing rheumatic heart disease. And now those people who develop rheumatic heart disease, X percent develop a valvular lesion, a vegetation, and out of those, whatever percent people develop heart problems. But we treat children age 3 and above with antibiotics. So I don't think he meant this, but the bacteria don't grow on the heart valve, right? It's antibodies, it's a mimic. It's the antibodies to the same epitopes on the bacteria end up on the valves. So is that present now? Then Chal Shabbos for strep throat on Shabbos? B'daraisa again? I don't know. I mean, Baruch Hashem, the way Hashem created the world, we have 10 days to treat strep throat, so this shouldn't happen. There are never 10 days of Shabbos in a row. There are at most 3, one of those at least being a second day Yontif, which is going to be more Chal anyway. One of them being Yontif, which is going to be more Chal anyway. It's not going to be an issue. But in theory, if this, you know, could I have a Chal Shabbos or something like that? They don't really discuss it. But could you say the Machla is here right now? I don't know. So, despite his saying the Machla has to be here right now, he then talks about driving back from the hospital on Shabbos for ambulance drivers, the big machlokas, Rav Shlomo Zalman, Mrs. Yeles agreed with him, and Rav Moshe Feinstein. Can the ambulance drivers drive back on Shabbos, driving against the Raisa? Rav Moshe said yes, Rav Shlomo Zalman said no, don't want to get into that right now. He says, why not? You're coming back home, there's nothing you're going to do. It's a Doraisa, we don't use in the past, and we don't allow that for no reason. He says, but if you live in a big city, and statistically you know you take 30 people to the hospital every day, and this was the second person, then you drive back. Even though there's no chol b'faneinu, even though there's no sakana right now, we know you're going to be necessary. You know, we know it's going to be necessary. So he allows room for statistical probability in making these cheshbonos. But he doesn't then get back to when the machla is there. So, in phrasing it differently, Dr. Avram told me that Shlomo Zalman said, if the rodeif, which he called the bacteria, you know, the sakana is currently present, with Michal Shabbos. So Dr. Avram said that one of his favorite things was making up cases and presenting them to Shlomo Zalman, because real cases didn't always, you know, tweak at the push the limit. So he would say, in all these cases are obstetrics, which I don't feel as comfortable with, but in terms of doing an episiotomy on the woman who's about to have a baby, and so you do the episiotomy, and it's necessary, and that's Mutar Michal Shabbos for Yoledes. She's one of those people who's considered a Chol Shesh Pasakana halachically, and I guess if you didn't do it, for whatever reason, we're allowed to do it, it doesn't matter. So the question is, do you have to stitch her up? So let's say Shabbos is going to be over in 5 minutes. I can just wait 5 minutes and then do the stitching. And Shlomo Zalman held that stitching is an Issur D'oraisa on Shabbos. That's a separate machlokas of tofer, of sewing. Is sewing in a human body considered D'oraisa? Remember, Shlomo Zalman held it was D'oraisa. So can you do that on Shabbos, or should I just wait the 5 minutes? So he says, why are you sewing the patient up? Well, she's still developing infections. Why are you developing infections? Well, there are bacteria around, and it'll get into the wound, and she can develop sepsis in theory, and it's a serious thing, and it's not the most clean place. So he asked him, he goes, do you have a Zman chart on you? He said, yeah. He goes, do you know when Shabbos ends? He said, yeah. He goes, do the bacteria have the same Zman chart that you do? Meaning, the bacteria, he goes, the bacteria are there now? He said, yeah. So then you have Shabbos right now. So he said, you're allowed to do that right now. Even though waiting the 5 minutes wouldn't put the woman more at risk. Importantly, if waiting the 5 minutes is going to put her at risk later, we're still allowed to mechal Shabbos, right? That's the whole point. We're allowed to mechal Shabbos to prevent the sakana later, as long as something is present right now. That's the idea. So if the sakana will be present later, but it's not present right now, that's the issue. And so he's saying these bacteria are present right now. So I had a question with one of my kids, Eliyahu, third voice, so he fell and cut his chin Friday night. And so in theory, I guess we're allowed to mechal, we have to sum up. So we're allowed to mechal Shabbos d'oraisa for him. So he's one of those patients who, my next door neighbor is actually an ENT, so I asked him, how quickly do I have to go to the hospital? Because I don't know how big the wound has to be to go to have a stitch, but he does. So he's like, if you need to go tonight. So he's one of those cholim sheish b'hem sakana that we had a little bit of time to think about. I cleaned it, and he had a couple of hours to get it stitched. So it was one of those cases where we were able to apply this for Shlomo Zalman, that the bacteria are currently present, I guess, and then we became a chal shabbos with the rice. But we had time at least to think about all the serum involved and what we would do. So I ended up taking a cab, and I don't know that I needed to do that. But I could have asked Hatzalah, I think, to take me. Because it was a chol sheish b'hem, technically a chol sheish b'hem sakana. So in terms of other, so we still haven't discovered what the level of the suffix is. So we know if the bacteria is present right now, and that bacteria can cause an infection, neither does the laser or someone tells what's the risk of causing the infection. So there's the famous Shuk Chasam Sofer, Chasam Sofer Yoridea Shin Lamed Ches, which is the most famous medically relevant Shuk Chasam Sofer in almost every discussion of medicine. It just covers the gamut. Death, Pikuach Nefesh, brain death, Tumas Kohanim, how do you read Nukara? It's a fascinating tshuva, and I like to incorporate it whenever I do this. So he's talking about, they had a question that apparently had people who were being buried alive, and so in order to prevent being buried alive, they made all these rules. They had to wait X amount of time after the person was presumed dead, like 3 days or so. It was originally 3 days of Mecklenburg Schwerin back in 17-something. Already comes to Chasam Sofer, it was a day and a half or something. And this was already accepted among the Jews, that we would do this. And so his question was, well, can you do this or not? And so one of the riots they have is a Masachas Smachos. Masachas Smachos says that Pokdim Alakavar and Gimel Yomim. You're allowed to go visit the cavern 3 days after you bury a person. They didn't used to bury in graves, in the dirt. They used to have these kuchim, these caves, with like, it looks sort of like the morgue, and they have these like beds coming out of the wall, and they used to lay the person there. And so you can actually go and visit the person for 3 days. And they say, you know, once they did that, and on the third day, the guy got up. And he was fine. And he lived 25 more years and had kids. They say, you see? Pikuach nefesh. How can you bury the person if you're not sure if he's dead? Pikuach nefesh, that's crazy. It should be docha every iser. What, is it Baal Tali and you're not allowed to lean? It's not Ritzicha, it's not Gilei Reis, it's not a Bazaar. So he says, that's beyond the realm of possibility. He calls it a miyuta to miyuta that we're not even remarries a choshish for. That's so far-fetched that we're not choshish for it. So he says that would happen once in 1,000 years. Now, I don't think he was giving us a rigorous statistical determination, although some posts can then go on and try to figure out how many people died each year and how many people died in those 1,000 years and try to come up with a number. I don't believe he was doing that. I think he was just giving an example. And most posts can assume that he's saying this is a Maisa Nisim. That's not even in the discussion of realm of possibility. We're not talking about percentages. That's not what we call percentage. But it seems to be that there is some limit to where we're willing to go. People like to quote, I saw one person quote at least, the Shutt Maharsham, who says that we're not choshesh for certain percentages. I think they misread it. We can talk about it later if there's time. People quote the Shutt Maharsham, Chelegavav, Simen Kuf Kavdalev, that we do normally follow some number, and it has to be a significant number. And then we will follow a klal of like 10% or 7% or something, unless now we're not from Chal Shabbos. But I don't believe that's what he's saying, but I'll throw it out there because people do quote this. So, like I said, most posts today assume whatever we treat as a sakana medically is considered a sakana. So the health syndrome we treat as a sakana is a sakana. The first person to really talk about this is a Shem Yehuda or Vizier Yehuda Unterman. He was one of the chief rabbis of Israel, I think back in the 30s or 40s or earlier. Someone correct me on that. Mechav Rus was actually his great nephew. I never asked him what he was. When we were there, they were clearing out his library, and they didn't have any more Shevet Yehudas left, so I was going to get one. But it's an excellent sefer. It's one of the first time really to deal with like medically modern medicine in a halachic way. And it's really three halachim. The first chelik is like three quarters of the sefer dealing with medical topics. So he says, by medicine, we're allowed to. He's asking the obvious question: do I have to be concerned for everything? Doesn't it get ridiculous? There's always bacteria, and I can always get sick, and I can always get septic. So he says, no, we can follow Shomer Psayim Hashem. When the medical community and the general community isn't concerned for something, so we say Shomer Psayim Hashem. Hashem protects those who, I guess, simple people, or people who are just willing to live on their lives and not being concerned with everything. So we're allowed to follow Shamar Psalm Hashem. If nobody's concerned, we're not concerned either. But he said the opposite is also true. When everyone's concerned, I don't care what the doctors say, I don't care what the numbers are, we're going to pass in like that. So whatever you're going to think of the 1.1% of the health syndrome, medically be treated as a sakana. And therefore, we're going to call Shabbos for it. And Shmir Shabbos and Karak Lamed Beis writes that Rosh Hashanah would agree to this also. And that we are going to call Shabbos, we're going to apply the Shomer Psalm Hashem and the opposite of Shomer Psalm Hashem as well. So we're pretty much going to call Shabbos whenever any medical person is concerned that there's a Kil Shabbos, whenever any patient is concerned, I'm sorry, whenever any doctor is concerned of a sakana, whenever any patient is concerned of a sakana, we're going to call Shabbos. Whatever that number is, if the medical community is concerned, we're concerned. If the patient is concerned, we're concerned. So where that number is precisely is interesting to try to figure out, but it's not practically so relevant. So we have, now we know what level of sakana is. What about certain, there are certain types of people who we still need to question about. And the Pesukim discuss certain categories of questionable people or questionable practices. So what about a goseis? A goseis is defined as someone who's moribund, which I never understood what that word means. I just thought about goseis. A person who's dying, and in halacha, a goseis is treated in a certain way. You're not allowed to move the goseis. You're not allowed to touch a goseis. According to the Rambam, you're not allowed to move a goseis because you might be hastening his death by even a couple of seconds. And although medically we don't care, in a couple of seconds, you can't measure this. We don't care. We just can't measure it. We don't know. We treat these patients routinely. The post can say, if a person's a ghost, we don't do routine blood tests. We don't do all these routine things to them because they're a ghost, they're dying. Some posts can have a more broad view of what a ghost is, but generally it means the last couple of days, last couple of hours. So do we bechal Shabbos for a ghost? A ghost isn't going to live. And the halacha of Shulchan is, yeah, we do bechal Shabbos for a ghost. The case they bring is somebody who's under the avalanche, but Merutzatz Mocho, his brain is, head is smashed in some way. This patient is not going to live, but Yom Chal Shabbos to do whatever we can to give him those extra couple of minutes. Because even a couple of minutes in halacha is considered saving life. We don't have to save, right? We don't pass in Chal Shabbos Achas Kadesh Yishmor Shabbos Os Harbeh, but you'll keep extra Shabboses, even if this patient is not living another week, especially back in the day where we really had no interventions for this person. You know, he's gasping for his last breaths, maybe giving him, I don't know what they would have given him back in the day, morphine or opium or hashish or whatever they had that would help him. And you would light him on Shabbos to alleviate this patient's suffering or something like that. It would be mutter. Interesting that just in terms of Chalal Shabbos Achas, the Ran works that maybe this still has relevance. So he says, so what about a patient exactly like this who will not live for a week? Who pretty certainly won't live for a week. So practically we say doctors don't have that right to establish who's going to live for a week and who's not going to live for a week, being just who's going to live and who's not going to live. That's not in our hands. But still, patient's Murtas Mocho is not going to live. We have no intervention for him. So the Ran says, yeah, we're still Machal Shabbos Shemei Harer B'tshuva. Okay, so Shemei Harer B'tshuva is nice. B'tshuva is an important mitzvah, and it's redeeming and all sorts of things, but it's not Shabbos Harbei. So if we're working within that framework, how does that work? So Rabbi Tabor quoted Rabbi Soloveitchik and saying, yeah, because Shemei Harer B'tshuva and then Zdonos Nasos Kemitzvos, right? All those Shabbos he's Machal in the past, when he does tshuva, they become for him Shabbos as he accepted upon, he was able to recover, he was able to keep. And the Rav then quoted in halachic mind, I think, at least, it's difficult to say, but I understand, that in halacha, time can go both ways, and you can actually make kind of mitzvos retroactively. And that, yeah, you can really make kind of mitzvot, the shemei harer b'tshuva. And the reason I say this is that, you know, sometimes these last, even a couple of minutes that you have with patients sometimes, they're important. Just think about it. When Michal Shabbos pointed to this view of Shabbos harer, we're really going to think he's going to make kind of Shabbosos with these couple of minutes that he's harer b'tshuva. So we really take these couple of minutes very seriously. And so we will mechal Shabbos for a goseis. What about an ubar? What about a fetus? So it's a machlokas b'had in the rosh, whether mechal Shabbos for a fetus or not. We usually pass in yes. And interestingly, they say, you know, there's a question if the fetus has a nefesh or not. A nefesh, when we say, you know, the question when we brought it before, when the fetus is causing risk to the woman's life, so when it's inside, if it's causing her risk for life, we will allow usually to terminate the pregnancy. However, once it comes out, we won't, because ain't doch a nefesh b'fnei nefesh. Rashi says there, until the fetus comes out, it doesn't have a nefesh. So how can Chal Shabbos from he doesn't have a nefesh? So I just thought this was cute. One of the poskim points out, how do we know you can't? What's the issue of abortion? Where do we get it from? So shofik adam ha'adam ba'adam damoy shofik. If you murder a person, so ba'adam damoy shofik, the best thing to put you to death. And the Gemara darshan shofik adam, person who spills blood, ha'adam ba'adam, a person within a person, so then damo yisafik, a fetus. So he says, doesn't say nefesh, and the pasuk says, elam yisafik, ha'adam ba'chai bahem. So if the fetus is called an Adam, so then he would be fall into both of them. So I thought that was cute. The Rosh didn't. And so he disagreed. But we pass and we will. Again, there's going to be, you know, a limit to that also. And the poskim, so for example, this has to be a recognized fetus within the woman. So if a person, you know, if there's an IVF facility who really has to show them the liquid nitrogen tank gets unplugged or something, can you plug that back in on Shabbos? All these are fertilized embryos at day 3, day 5 that are sitting there. The embryos, we know they could potentially be life, but they're not actually within the woman. Almost all posts will not allow you to Mechal Shabbos, b'doraisa, to save those. B'doraisa. Like I said, we can almost always get around things, especially today. But to Mechal Shabbos, b'doraisa, to save those embryos, I'll call them at least, you cannot Mechal Shabbos. So we have a limit. And the last thing I want to talk about is Sakanas Eiver, when you have a limit risk. And so there's a whole discussion when one's limb's at risk and you're going to lose your limb or not lose your limb. And to me, practically, if you're going to lose your limb, your life is almost certainly going to be at risk. The diabetic with osteo, we're going to, you know, we're taking off the because we're concerned that he's going to get something. But there's a discussion, and we will not Mechal Shabbos the B'doraisa to save a limb. And so the relevance of this is only because that the Tosafos Shulchan Aruch Chaim Na'ah, so Chaim Na'ah is famous not only for his shiurim, but he also has a lot of stuff on Hilchos Refuah. So he says, it's not only that you're going to lose your limb, like it's going to fall off. It's if it won't be able to function in the same way that it was previously. So if you like, again with my kids, he was going for the oven on Shabbos, and so we pulled him away, and I heard a pop, and he had nursemaid's elbow. So if, something afterwards I didn't know, but if you don't treat this within a really long time, the functioning of the elbow can be affected. So let's say it was a different joint. I don't know much about ortho, but if you had a different joint where you really had to treat it much more quickly, could you mechal Shabbos b'doraisa to save this limb from having complete functioning? The answer is no. You cannot mechal Shabbos b'doraisa to save even the good functioning of a limb. So that's really where it comes up to. Incidentally, in case you there are not many ortho people, but you should know, you have a nursemaid's elbow, you just have to put your arm like this and go like that. So Hatzela was willing to take me to the hospital. I said, if you can take me to the hospital, I should call my pediatrician first. He's Jewish, he's not so frum, so I didn't want him to the house. Whatever. So I called him. He's like, just do this and give him Advil. And so we saved the trip to the hospital. So also another question of Craig, we said preventing a sakana, we said can be mutter. And then the question of preventing Chilul Shabbos. If there's a cholos yesh bo sakana, how much do I have to go out of my way to prevent Chilul Shabbos? So Rav Shlomo Zalman has all these questions, and this is relevant, I guess, in areas in Israel where they need to drive to the hospital, and there are no non-Jewish taxis. And so, you know, every building, there's only one family with a car, or there's one family with this and one family with that. So he has a case, you know, the person needs hot water, and I don't have hot water. So this is called Yesh B'Sakana, so I'm allowed to go and warm up hot water. But my neighbor, who's sleeping right now, he's taking a nap, he has hot water on Shabbos. Do I have to go wake him, or can I boil up my own hot water? So all these cases Rav Shlomo Zalman points out are the patient, the guy's sleeping. And so he says, no, you don't have to wake the guy to avoid Chilul Shabbos. So Rav Zilberstein and Tarsi Oledes. Tarsi Oledes is one of the most fascinating sperm out there. It's about Leida B'Shabbos. He has fascinating issues about Leida B'Shabbos, having a baby on Shabbos. It's far more relevant for a doctor than for a patient. So he goes through, if you have to make a phone call exactly, what's the best way? He has a list of like 15 steps you can do to try to avoid using the phone in a certain way. And it's relevant for a physician who needs to think about these things in advance. Like I said, the Chil Shabbos, that you really, if you're concerned, you just dial the number. But he goes through all the, it's fascinating, he has a fascinating way of approaching halacha, but he discusses a lot of relevant things. He goes, yeah, but he thought that based on his Rabbi Yashiv's son-in-law, based on something Rabbi Yashiv told him, when the person's sleeping, he doesn't really have a chiyuv to save this person's life. Like we said, everyone does, but he's saying, well, the person's not going to die. He's a Chil Shabbos, he's not going to die if he doesn't get the hot water from the neighbor. Because he can get hot water from the guy who's going to boil it. So there's no really sakana, and he really has no chiyuv, so together you can't really wake him. There's a sefer, Divrei Chanina, by Rabbi Chanina Rottenberg, on refuah, all sorts of weird refuah things. He has a sefer on mazalos and shiduchim also. I haven't read that, but just... Okay? So he tries to bring other rayas that maybe he's trying to explain this machlokas. They quote the Reb Epstein in the sefer in the Siddur Minchas Yerushalayim, which was really the first medically halachic relevant sefer. It's a Siddur with instructions on what to do on Shabbos. So that person really, Reb Epstein, I don't know who he is, But he really thought that you should wake the other person, or someone disagreed with him, and so he tries to develop his own thesis of why this should be. But you don't have to go out of your way to Michal Shat to avoid philosophical Michal Shat. So just examples that are from medically relevant examples that we can talk about now, and that we have these rules. So people like to talk about fever. What level of fever can we Michal Shabbos for? And so Rabbi Sinensky pointed out Moshe in the Tshuva Narachaim Aleph is 102. And I think that's a little bit, with respect to Moshe, I don't know what information he had. It's hard to know what information he's posting had when you're making decisions. But if I had 102 fever, I would not go into the hospital. I honestly wouldn't. But if my one-month-old had 102 fever, I'd be in the hospital. And if a cancer patient had 102 fever and they were neutropenic, I'd go to the hospital. A lot of this clinically is going to be clinically contextual. What is going on exactly with the fever? I mean, for 102 fever, I'm really going to require full Shabbos. What am I going to do, make myself tea? I guess. I mean, it's hard to know, like, are you really a close to Yesh Bas when you have 102 fever? If you're a healthy person? I don't know. But if you have some condition you have 102 fever, then you certainly are. So it's hard. I would always thought these were, you know, if a dialysis patient has fever, all these things are different, you know. And so I find the numbers for fever to be a very difficult discussion to relate to. The other question I thought about is treating strep throat, again, where the rheumatic heart disease is a concern, and that's the only reason we treat it. And there's a suffix of a suffix if it'll actually cause a risk to life. Now we said, even if it'll cause a risk to life in the future, we're going to chal Shabbos now if the sakana is present now. So I don't know if the bacteria are present now, or the antibodies aren't really present now. And they discuss all of these machlas in Shulchan Aruch, where you're allowed to Michal Shabbos, you're not allowed to Michal Shabbos. And so, in the end, the way they explain, we don't know what any of these things are, and the way they explain all of them is they say, oh, when you are allowed to Michal Shabbos, it's when it's really present now, it just has ramifications later on. When you're not allowed to Michal Shabbos, it's when it doesn't really have ramifications, where it's present now, but it's something else that will develop later. And they sort of just say that about these safidna and all these other things in Shulchan Aruch, we don't really know what they are, but it seems like more of a retroactive way of applying our theory to that which was already established, but we can't explain otherwise. So what about more interesting patients, a hypertensive or diabetic patient? So a diabetic patient, the more carefully we control their diabetes, the longer they'll live, right? I mean, there's a paper that just showed that, you know, more tightly controlled diabetes is actually a risk to life, but that's only in hospitals, really, where they become hypotensive because we do a sliding scale. Yes?
But forget about, long-term, but if you don't treat it now, they're going to go into hyperglycemia.
Okay, so if they go into hyperglycemic shock, they become hypoglycemic. Depends how serious your diabetes is. Then you're certainly going to treat it. But let's say they can go a meal without it. Or their landis will cover them a little bit. Right? And so, diabetics, to test your blood isn't their right side job, because you have to prick yourself and remove blood for the purpose of examining that blood and seeing the blood sugar. There's almost no way to avoid this as being a chil Shabbos d'oraisa. Can you do this? So we said, first of all, if you're going to go into hyperglycemia, if you're going to go into DKA, you're going to become hypoglycemic and pass out, so then certainly your cholesterol is supposed to come, you have to do that. But what about in terms of the long-term goal? Is there machla here? Is there machla not here on a hypertensive? Who, yeah, if you have uncontrolled hypertension, so then you can develop, you know, all sorts of cardiac changes. Is there machla here? I guess so. So what cholesterol is going to have to do, you have to take medication again. So yeah, we're going to knock out all of these things to really be only a drabanan, but could you Michal Shabbos or Doraisa can you decide? For a diabetic Vipassan, yes. First of all, because of the DKA and hypoglycemia. But even so, in terms of the long risk factors, their Rafa is considered to be here. Do they have the atherosclerotic changes of diabetes yet? I don't know. Do they have the small cell vascular problems, the small vessel problems yet? I don't know. You know, their kidneys, are they affected yet? I don't know. But we're going to Michal Shabbos for them anyway. So in terms of that, I was just thinking last night, so same question about smoking, right? I mean, diabetes, every time your sugar hits 400, I can't say, oh, you're losing 7 minutes of life. That's ridiculous. I don't know how much. But we know that better controlled diabetes statistically promotes longer living. So to do with smoking, I can't tell you how much each cigarette knocks out. So this is this British study that tried to show that each cigarette knocks out 7 minutes. Because they did this ridiculous statistical analysis where they said, oh, they took X number of people and they averaged, they smoked this number of cigarettes. And people who didn't smoke lived this number of years, so they calculated the number of cigarettes per minute. But every time you smoke a cigarette, are you knocking out X number of minutes? And if you are, am I allowed to Michal Shabbos b'doraisa to make somebody stop smoking? Because it's the same thing as a diabetic, right? He's allowed to prick his finger to check his glucose if he's not going to go into DKA or hypoglycemia to save those couple of minutes in his later in life. So it would make sense also, I guess, to Michal Shabbos to stop somebody from smoking. According to logic, I guess if you assume that each cigarette is causing a problem, it will be harder to prove. Roy Blythe actually has a whole piece on this, but he doesn't think each cigarette is causing a problem, and that may have relevance there. Can you smoke? Can you not smoke? Nobody should smoke. Nobody should get the wrong impression. Smoking is evil and bad, and it will kill you. But killing Mechal Shabbos prevents somebody from smoking is a question. And then the last example I have is Coumadin for almost anything. You have a person with a mechanical valve. If they don't have their Coumadin today, they could develop a clot on the spot and get a stroke and die. So is there Machla here right now? Well, right now their INR is 3, right? So they're okay. Or is it 3? Mechanical valve, okay, 3.5. No, they're 2.5 to 3.5. So let's say they're 3, right? Everyone else is 2 to 3. Mechanical valve is 2.5 to 3.5. So their INR is 3 Friday night. So they're okay. And then Shabbos morning, they know if they don't take their Coumadin by the afternoon, their INR will go down like 2.4. So are they, or is the Machla here right now? Is it not here right now, the potential for clotting? We generally treat it as yes, and mostly because we don't have to answer the question, because it almost only be a drabanan. But in theory, you'd say, no, their Machla is here right now. They have this mechanical valve. The fact that I'm medically preventing the Sakana from being here now by having a good INR does not mean that the Machla doesn't exist. I'm just masking it. I'm treating it. But the fact that you, that's my opinion, I haven't seen this in writing, that if you're treating the Machla, it doesn't mean it's gone. It's there, and if you don't continue to treat it, it'll come back. So you have to treat the Machla as if it's still there. So, just in terms of halachic assessment of, just go to the third section, we have halachic assessment of who is a cholam mesukan and who is not. So we know that a baby at a bris is a cholam mesukan, and 3 days after a bris is a cholam mesukan. So the Rashbas writes that if you have a baby who's, we're not doing the bris on time for whatever reason, not because of Bekash Mashos, but not that we don't know which day it is, but because of whatever reason we delayed the bris, you do not do the bris on Thursday or Friday. Because the third day after the bris will be Shabbos, and that you'll put the, that will be making a chol sheish basakam on Shabbos, and you're not allowed to do that. And Sfardim have a machlokes, but many Sfardim adopt this practice, and we will not do a chol, and we will not perform a bris on a chol sheish basakana on a Thursday or Friday. I'll get to the famous question of Alamor and Ramban, that back in the day they used to bathe the baby with hot water before the bris. And so let's say the hot water is spilled and you don't have hot water before the bris. Do you do the bris or not on Shabbos? Or you need the hot water, I'm sorry, after, you need the hot water for after the bris. So do you do the bris or not on Shabbos? So the Ramban says you do the bris. After the bris, the baby is a chol sheish basakana. So you can warm up water on Shabbos. What's the big deal? So in what Rav Rosenzweig likes to call, how do you plan your halachic life?
Halachic planning.
So Balamor says, no, come on, give me a break. I know you're going to do the chal Shabbos, so don't do the bris. Do the bris on Sunday. You can't do that. So it's sort of, we treat it seriously as a chol sheish basakana, we have to avoid it. The other issue is a laboring woman in 3 days after. Not relevant for him, because Shabbos has passed. But let's say for Yom Kippur, can a woman who just gave birth fast Yom Kippur? She is declared a chol sheish basakana for 3 days. So what if she wants to fast Yom Kippur? So Rav Avadia, who reads the Shulchan Aruch expertly, says, absolutely not. You cannot fast Yom Kippur. You're a chol sheish basakana. You have a mitzvah to eat. You cannot put your life at risk. And I don't care what the doctors say. The halacha is you're a chol sheish basakana. And Rav Sternbach's like, in a strange piece for Sternbach, he's going to adopt the doctor's position on this. He goes, she's not a chol sheish basakana, so she can fast if she wants to. Which for Sternbach is interesting. But Rav Shlomo Zalman has a similar idea. That if the doctors don't think she's a chol sheish basakana, then she has an option. But Rav Avadia takes this very seriously. Again, then we have the other issues that labeled in the Gemara. Safidna, maka, al gav hayav, in the back of a hand, the back of a foot, are treated as cholim sheish b'hem sakana. We don't really know what they are, and so whenever they develop models of what they are, they apply it, and they say, oh, that must be that the makla is here now, and that's why it's mutter. Or that must be that the makla isn't here now, and that's why it's not mutter. But we don't really know what they are. So in a couple of minutes, I just want to discuss, what do you do? So now, in terms of a physician perspective, what do you do when I can plan for these things? Right? What can I do for this chol sheish basakana? Shulchan Aruch writes, based on the Rambam, kol ma she'osim lo b'chol. You can do whatever you do on chol. You pretend that Shabbos doesn't exist. You do everything they need to do, even those things that had I not done them, I will not avoid a sakana. Right? There are a lot of things we do. I can treat the stemi and avoid the sakana, but there are a lot of other things we do that aren't necessarily preventing the sakana right now, but that's how we treat a chol sheish basakana. Even things that aren't can save his life right now. So a lot of people say this depends on how you view Kibbutz Nefesh on Shabbos as Chutra Dechuya, whether Chutra means that Shabbos doesn't exist pretty much, Shabbos is set aside and we do everything we can. Dechuya means Shabbos exists, and every time you have to do something, you have to set aside the rules of Shabbos. And so they say, this is a nafkamina, what you can do, Sha'ar Tzrachim. You know, you have a patient who's not feeling well, they want a bowl of chicken soup. So is chicken soup, and the Chol Sheish Basakana for whatever reason, is chicken soup really gonna prevent any sakana? Not in anything that I've seen. So let's assume not. There was a study about chicken soup, and does it have, can it help colds and whatnot? But okay, let's assume not. So can you warm that chicken soup? They say, if it's Shabbos is Chutra, so then yeah, Shabbos is Chutra, so no. So Rav Avadia likes to point out that there's a Radvaz who holds the Chuya and still quotes this Rambam as a Halacha. So most people assume it's a Hutra the Chuya thing, it's a big brisker approach to this, and Ravadi points out there are poskim from other generations who adopted the Chuya model but still allowed you to do Sar Tzrachav. And they get around the different, and they said, so the Radvaz writes, yeah, it's the Chuya, meaning it's not going to prevent the Sakana, but it's a whole Sheishma Sakana. And so everything you're going to do to him that's going to make him better, or help him in some way, is going to get him out of that Sakana. Whether it's medically proven or not, I don't want to make him any worse, and as long as this will keep him at his current level or make him better, it's going to be mutter, even though it won't get him out of the Sakana. And he holds the Chuya. So he doesn't really like it so much. So other person quote from that Gemara in Yuma, one of the other limudim we had for was from Mila. So do those other limudim stand? So Chalav Shabbos Achas of Mila. So is Mila Hutra the Chuya on Shabbos? So we really normally paskin Hutra on Shabbos. And Mila, we set aside Shabbos totally and it's not the Chuya. He said, so if we can learn Pikuach Nefesh from Mila, so Pikuach Nefesh should be Hutra on Shabbos also. And so the Tevas Gomez, the Prima Gadim Sefer on Chumash, so he wants to know, so we pass on that an Isha to share a level, that a woman can do perform a Bris Mila. That's what Pesach and Shulchan Aruch. So there's a day in Kosvus that a woman is only Chayeves in the low Taseh of Shabbos, because it's not in the Chuyav, is not part of the Mitzvah Saseh on Shabbos. And Shabbos is a Mitzvah Salava for a prohibition to violate Shabbos and Mitzvah Saseh to keep Shabbos. So a woman's only Chayev in one of the two. In the low tasse, right? She's part of the tasse, it's a close to the Kedushin. So he says, so wait a minute. So if a woman can do a Mila, and a man who would do the Mila would violate both the Lav and the Assay, so we should have women do the Milas on Shabbos. Even if we don't pass like a Kedushin, just on the off chance that we do pass like a Kedushin, it would be better. So he says, no, Mila's Hutra on Shabbos. And so we don't have to come up with these fancy things that normally women don't do Mila. We're not going to train a woman just to do Mila on Shabbos. We don't need to do that. If she wants to, that might be a separate story, if she's qualified to do so. But we don't have to go and try to find the woman. We don't have to go out of our way to do something that we don't normally do to avoid it, because Mila is good for B'Shabbos. And the other issue, just in terms of the Hutra D'Chuya, is that the Rambam writes, and many poskim write, that Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Shabbos, and he's the word Docha, D'Chuya Hiya Shabbos Eitzel Pikuach Nefesh. And so the Gemara points out, it says Docha, so it's D'Chuya. And so a lot of poskim point that not necessarily true, and even the poskim who say D'Chuya clearly hold Hutra. They're just using the language of the Shulchan Aruch. So nothing means for Sha'ar Tzrachav, so back to, we're about to run out of time, so just one thing on the Sha'ar Tzrachav, what's the limit of Sha'ar Tzrachav? Can we do everything? So if it's hard, we're going to pass on to Shulchan Aruch and Rav Avadia to do Sha'ar Tzrachav, even if we hold the Chuya. So can you do everything? Can you make the chicken soup on Shabbos? Can you start to make notes on Shabbos? Can you do a lot of things on Shabbos that you wouldn't normally do? So the Or L'Tzion, Rav Tzion Abashol, he writes, so things that aren't actually going to promote the health of the patient. Recording information on Shabbos that is not going to promote the health of the patient, writing down his temperature, you're not allowed to do that. Even if you hold Sha'ar Tzrachav, even if you hold Kutra. Rav Shlomo Zalman also, Dr. Avram was saying once, he held, so what if the patient wants to turn on the TV, wants to relax? He didn't buy it. Chicken soup, he thought was okay, because it's promoting the bodily health of the patient. What if the patient wanted a safer, and in order to get the safer, he had to cross the street, and it was just a rabbi, so can you bring him the safer? So yes, you can do it. You can do Peshina, you may go Bidoraisa, fine. But you want to do Bidoraisa, so can you? So he said no. So the firm person who's learning all day, he said he was fighting with him about this, firm person who learns, and this is really going to help him, he'll connect, and he'll feel good, he said no. He can only do those things that are actually going to benefit his body, not things that are moda. Like a newfangled, like a fan, you know, not something that's that has no really benefit, but that's like an in thing to do. You know, he wasn't into these like modern, like the music will help me relax. He didn't really like that. He didn't explain it though. Yes.
When we say on every Friday night with the second pair of Shabbos, so is there something there about the light for a sick person? Because it helps them psychologically, and that can be promote their health.
So, yeah, that's so. So turning off the candle, nachashin shvichol gufa, is not a doraisa. And so it's a separate category. And when can you do it for cholam? When can you not do it for cholam? But it's not a doraisa. Okay. And so that's why the discussion gets off the ground. What kind of cholam is it talking about? Maybe even the cholam ain't basakana, but it's a nachashin shvichol gufa. So, just two more pieces. I know. About the end. So in terms of just those needs that we need to do, so even though let's see, even the starter we're gonna hold, we can't do everything. And in terms of requiring a shinui for these things, you have to try to minimize the chil Shabbos involved. So for the starter we're gonna say Sha'ar Tzrachav, and most people are gonna say Hutra, you don't have to do a shinui. you can do everything, right? Making a shinui makes things by rising to the rabbanon is doing them in a mishunatic way. I'm not going to get into how you do that. Let's say you figured that out. You can do it in a mishunatic way. So do you have to do that or not? So the Shulchan Aruch paskins no, the Rambam paskins yes. So even for the Sfaradim, we're going to paskin yes, and Shartz Rafa yes, and Hutra yes. So what about all these things that Shartz Rafa that Reuven Tzion Abba Shalom Talmud said no? So Dr. Avram writes that he spoke to Rav Avadia about it, and he said, okay, those things you do b'shinui. Those extra things you should do b'shinui. Shartz Rachav and all those things, yes, 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 but only when they really help the patient, but not when they're not. So just the last piece. So what about Shartz Rachav? This is a fascinating discussion. And can you mechal Shabbos b'doraisa to get a tzaddik to daven for you? So the Kavach Haim puts a Pesach HaDvir, who quotes a ma'ase that someone was sick on Shabbos, and he wanted, his brother didn't know, and he wanted his brother to do a limud and a tzedakah in the shul for him to help him get better. And he goes through exactly what Isser was involved and what the letter. So can you write it on Shabbos? And they wrote it in a different language, they wrote it in Hebrew. So can you write it in Hebrew if you had a non-Jew write it in Hebrew? So can the non-Jew be a mail carrier on Shabbos? What if it's muchach that it's an Israel, it's a Jew's letter because it was written in Hebrew? And he goes through all these things really drama. He goes, but in the end, he goes, but this is really helping the patient get better. We really have a moon that the patient can get better. So of course, the Mechal Shabbos with Daraisa to ask a tzaddik to daven for you. So the Kaf HaChaim quotes this from the Pesach HaDvir. Everyone jumps on him and says this is not true. The Sefer V'Chaibahem I saw, he has a lot of I got the stuff. He quotes against it. He says when we say Shabbos Himelizak, when we should bear for Cholim on Shabbos. So we say Shabbos Himelizak Refuah Krova Lavo. So Shabbos Himelizak Refuah Krova Lavo. What is why is Refuah more Krova because Shabbos not to be Zoik on Shabbos? So they either say that you know that. No, Shabbos Yimelizah, okay. And we hope that Refuah Krova Lavo, it's a bracha. But, or alternatively, no. When you mekayim Shabbos correctly, that's the Refuah Krova Lavo. Keeping Shabbos is a mitzvah. And when you keep mitzvah, so then we know that Sachar Va'onis, you should get benefit, Hashem should protect you, and Hashem should take care of you. And he says, if you do that correctly, if you're not zoeing on Shabbos, if you keep Shabbos correctly, then Refuah Krova Lavo. And so that means you shouldn't do this. I should just point out, there's a Sefer Chasdei Avram. Rabbi Avram Friedlander, is the rabbi at Maimonides. And being at Maimonides in Brooklyn, in the heart of Borough Park, he has a lot of say in what goes on in the hospital, so it's fascinating through his sarim. He has two sarim, maybe he has more at this point. And he, I'm going to guess his chassidus just based on the makaris he brings. So he brings a bunch of chassidus sarim that do allow, in fact, you to go ask a tzaddik for a bracha, and you can mechal Shabbos to give a bracha, but that does not seem to be the prevalent opinion. Thank you.